This is Eliza Bent, senior editor at American Theater Magazine. It's March 24th, 2014, and next month, American Theater Magazine turns 30. Happy birthday, baby! Buon compleanno e buon anniversaire! When I started working here as an editorial assistant in 2006, I never imagined I'd be celebrating the magazine's 30th birthday. When the publication turned 25, a special anniversary issue was designed, a 588-page anthology with some 80 articles deep was published, and a gala event was planned and ultimately partied. 5 years have passed since that flurry of activity. As a mature 30-year-old publication, with signs of the first few silver hairs sprouting, for wisdom of course, we decided to take an audio approach. Joining me for chats and laughs are the magazine's editor-in-chief, Jim O'Quinn, and publisher Terry Nemeth. They have been with the magazine since it first came into the world.
30 years, 310 issues. Would you have guessed that it would have lasted this long?
310? You counted them up?
I counted every one of them. I really just added. It was notated in the anthology from 25, so I added.
Did you?
Yeah, I can do arithmetic. Okay.
I used to be able to remember every story and every article, but
that stopped a while ago.
That stopped a while ago, yes.
Well, really, do you think that it would have lasted this long?
I sort of did. I thought it was a necessary element for the artistic life of America to have a theater magazine, and I don't see any reason it should disappear.
Well, it's probably set some kind of record for longevity for American Theater Magazine, though, right?
Well, the old theater arts lasted from the teens to 1964.
So we have a stiff bar
to cross.
Jim started 6 months before me at TCG. You started in February. I started in October of
1982. They said in unison.
And in early 1983, with Lindy Zesch and Peter Zeisler, a lot of the idea was, how do we turn a newsletter into a magazine?
TCG had a monthly newsletter called Theater Communications that I was editing, and it was growing in popularity and circulation. But Peter and Lindy had in mind the idea of publishing a real general circulation magazine about the theater, because for 20 years there had been none. And they felt that as the National Service Organization for the Theater, they were in a unique position to publish such a magazine.
They did. Do you remember the original covers that we had for American Theater Magazine? Cynthia Friedman was our original designer, and she worked at Yale, and she worked at Yale Magazine for a while. Great designer. She's still around, does wonderful stuff.
She works for AARP now. We brought her on board and created the original look for American Theater. There have been three over the 30 years, three basic designs.
But you remember the designs for the first one? We had it was called Stage Magazine was one of the ideas.
Oh, yeah. That's
the one we liked best.
We liked Stage Magazine, but Peter and Lindy wisely knew
Peter was adamant. It had to be
American Theater Magazine. Mm. And indeed, that was the right choice.
Yep. But we mocked up a version like in the fall of 83, and we just pasted stories from the newsletter onto a thing with ads we found somewhere just to say, here's what it could look like. We had no idea how to actually do a magazine. We had our staff was quite small. There was two people who worked for the magazine. The book department, the magazine, marketing, and advertising were all one department, and there was four people.
Four people doing all of those roles.
All those roles.
But happily, I was a real-life journalist. I came from a journalism background, and Terry was a real-life maker of books. I'd come out of the hippy-dippy performance studies department at NYU, where I was legitimizing my interest in the theater, and he had come out of the hippy-dippy book movement of San Francisco of that time, and we came together here to join forces on this magazine.
It's to note that the magazine cost $2.50 back in 1984 and was 48 pages the first issue.
What does it cost today?
I think it's $6.95, and the subscription was like $19.50 For a full year subscription now, it's $19.95.
How about that? Woo. That's, talk about a bargain.
Talk about a deal.
Yeah. I was reading in the in this introduction to the American Theater Reader, the sort of anthology compendium for 25 years, that Joseph Campbell, the great thinker and philosopher, gave his blessing for the start of the magazine. Tell me more about how...
That original group of people that Peter Zeisler brought to, Peter and Lindy brought together to talk about the magazine was absolutely amazing.
Joseph was married to Jane Campbell, who started and ran the Honolulu Theater for Youth for years. And so they lived out there, and that was the big connection.
And Mr. Campbell actually came to at least one of the meetings and sat with us. We had Robert Brustein. We had... the great Canadian director John Hirsch. We had who else on that? John Houseman, the late John Houseman. Zelda, of course, was with us. Zelda Fitch Handler. The wonderful
Gilman.
Critic Richard Gilman was with us. Marjorie Bradley Kellogg, a fabulous designer who's still with us, and the late Alan Schneider joined us. So all these major figures from the theater were there, offering their ideas and their advice. I remember Richard Foreman came to. Talk with us some at the time as well.
Alan Schneider was our board president at that point too, and it was just a month later that he was killed in an auto accident
in London.
Directing Pinter, I believe. So it was kind of a sad moment shortly after the magazine launched. I think he was killed the first week in May.
But the first issue came out in April 84 with Sam Shepard in a funky cowboy hat on the cover, smoking a cigarette which
dangling.
Got us into some trouble. But it was a fantastic interview. At that time, Mr. Shepard wasn't fond of giving interviews, but he had given an interview to a young woman at Harvard, and she made that piece available to us. And that was the launch of our first issue.
What have been some of the more memorable articles or moments, Jim, in your tenure here?
Well, there are any number of articles.
I mean,
that
you have 310 to choose. 310
yeah, I
issues
know.
To choose from.
There are any number of landmark articles that you know that I love more than anything. I'll pick a few. We sent the fine writer Robert Coe to cover an early cornerstone. The peripatetic Cornerstone Theater Company. They traveled around the country in search of social, political, or economic conundrums to deal with in their theatrical work. They went to Port Gibson, Mississippi, and did an interracial Romeo and Juliet in the 80s. And Robert did a brilliant job of reporting on that. We put the young high school actors on the cover of the magazine.
That was their first trip across country, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Cornerstone's first trip across country. An amazing piece. And that presaged, you know, 20 years of coverage of Cornerstone and their amazing work under the great Bill Rausch, who's now artistic director of Oregon Shakespeare and the director of, and as of just this
when
past...
They, when they got to L.A., they stopped.
And they've stopped in L.A., but now Bill is a Broadway director with...
That's right.
The LBJ play all the way. But I love that piece. I love Don Shuey has written wonderful things for us. His early piece about Mabu Mines, an 8,000-word piece on the careers and work of Mabu Mines. And Mabu Mines, of course, is still going strong. But that was another piece that presaged many years of great coverage. We've had great pieces by... many pieces by Todd London, by the critic Roger Copeland. We've run essays by playwrights like Richard Nelson and Wallace Shawn. We've had Here I See other playwrights like Teresa Reback and Aisha Davis and Diana Sun. So it's hard to...
It's hard to name
things.
A few,
it's hard
I
to
know.
Name.
Terry, please.
Some of the things that I always think about too is the plays that we published in the magazine.
Absolutely.
We started, I think it was in 1986 or 87 with Emily Mann's Execution of Justice, an extraordinary play, and that was the first play. And then I think we did our 150th play 2 years ago, and it was Will Eno's The Realistic Joneses. So from The Execution of Justice to The Realistic Joneses really is kind of the breadth of what American theater language on a stage looks like. And I've been very proud of the writers and the plays that we've published here.
Tell me about your working dynamic over the years. What have been some of the lessons learned? I mean, you sort of joked that you didn't quite know what you were doing at the start. You were just these upshots working together, but
to say that's really true. When we first did the magazine, we printed actually in New York City, and no one prints a magazine in New York City anymore because you couldn't possibly afford to. But I think we had a circulation of what we imagined was something like 3,800 subscribers to our newsletter, which we thought was a great way to convert to the magazine. We already had this base, and we were going to grow on that. But once we converted it, we realized that there was actually only 1,200 paying subscribers to the newsletter. And a lot of these people were carried over for years by inaccuracies and sort of faulty systems. And so we weren't quite as successful as we thought, so we had more ground to make up. But we actually did.
Our circulation has gone as high as almost 20,000, and we printed 25,000 at its peak. Today we print fewer than that because we have an online presence as well, in part. And that presence, as you know, is going to increase in the coming months because we're going to have a full-fledged American Theater website, which will be inaugurated in the next few months.
That won't be happening until October, but that's okay.
Well, okay. Yeah. That's the next few months. That's 6 months away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like this patter between you two. And yeah. In terms of some of the were there any? I'm curious to know about the debacles. Like, what was there any like
terrible
great,
things that happened?
You know, like huge argument about who would go on the cover, or would we include that article or not?
No, not really. I know in our early days we often put famous faces on the cover, whether it was Eugene O'Neill or
Spalding Gray,
yeah, or something like that. And Mr. Brustein actually interjected his editorial opinion very strongly to say that he thought this should not be our magazine should not be a star vehicle, but that it was really important that production shots be the primary.
Is that why we did it?
That's one of the reasons, because he had a very strong opinion and
convinced us
that that was the case. And there are still faces on the cover of the magazine from time to time, but over the years production shots have predominated or other kinds of images. We had a terrible mishap one time when a chunk of the schedules in a season schedule magazine were sort of printed twice, and that was a problem.
I remember walking into Peter's office and saying, "Peter, the whole magazine has to be reprinted." And he looked at me like he was like I had 12 heads, and sort of sighed loudly and didn't say another word, and I walked out the door, and we reprinted
it. Yes.
And you did reprint it.
We printed the whole insert of the season schedules.
The season
and
schedules.
Might have been either the second or third year we did the season schedules, and we did them badly.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, there haven't been internecine battles that have impacted the magazine.
The other thing, too, about the magazine is the incredible wealth of editors and writers that we've had, you know, working at TCG for the magazine. It goes back, you know, to when Jim first started with Laura Ross, and then Todd London was here for a long time. And there's so many writers that Doug Langworthy.
Wonderful people. Mark Robinson and Catherine Sheehy, who are at Yale now. Jim Leverett is at Yale. He was a regular columnist for us. Wonderful small town journalist named Jack Savage was managing editor for a time.
Michelle Pierce.
Michelle Pierce, who lives in Atlanta theater now.
It's funny, I go back to this first issue. Greg Lemming was my assistant, and he's the one who did all the season schedules for the issue. And now Greg is has had a long career as a director in the theater, and right now he's the associate artistic director of the Solo theater in Sarasota, and he also runs their conservatory there.
Yes.
So all the people who've come through here and have gone on to you know, other careers, not necessarily in publishing or journalism, but they were really theater folk who were really committed to what the magazine was trying to do and the kind of the art and sensibility that we were reporting on.
Yes, it's been an amazing lineup of people. So, and we have amazing people with us right now. So
it only works if that's true.
That's right. That's right.
What do you see? What would your advice be for the future generations of publishers of theater and authors?
Stiff upper lip. don't let the bed bugs bite. Anything in publishing is a challenge, and it's more so all the time because publishing changes. Every time you think you know what it is, that means it's going to change the next day completely. You just have to be aware of that. And, you know, my head tends to explode every 3 years because everything that I learned before is now sort of obsolete, and I have to relearn things in order to facilitate any kind of future. So it's challenging, incredibly rewarding, too. And, you know, I think besides the magazine, we also do a book program here, which we're also very proud of. So it's been a lot of our work, and I think it will continue.
You know, what's encouraging to me, I was watching a rerun of Saturday Night Live the other night, and hearing a Will, what's his name? Sketch.
Will Ferrell
sketch. They used the logo from American Theater as a joke on Saturday Night Live. I said,
laughing matter.
No laughing American matter. So.
How do you envision American theater evolving, developing in the next 30 years? You mentioned, of course, the website that's coming up. We've just started these audio interviews. What else?
It will depend a lot on how the theater develops. You know, we're a journal of an art form, and we will track the art form as it goes. I mean, the theater changes a great deal. Sometimes it's more at the center of the nation's cultural conversation. I think that was true at different times in the 30s and the late 60s, the advent of Angels in America in the 80s and so forth. There are moments when the theater is an art form on people's minds. There's much more time when the theater is more recessive in the public mind, and I think our coverage will reflect that accordingly.
How that relates to publishing, I think it would take a bigger brain than mine. Like I said, you could figure out down the road a few years. I think the next generation of editors and writers will make that decision. We'll take the American theater and how we respond to the art and interact with the people who want to hear and read about it and celebrate it. It's for that next generation to figure out.
I think we have a really good antenna about finding the writers and the artists who matter and zeroing in on them, and that has to continue.
Jim and Terry, you've been so generous with your time, so articulate. I just had one last question, and
I thought that sounded like a perfect wrap.
I know it sounded like a wrap, but I faked you out. But it is. I think it's a question. Hopefully, you'll both appreciate somewhat. As we all know, American theater's last page is always the 20 questions page, and one of those classic 20 questions is, "It's not theater if." And I thought it might be nice to ask both of you that question in a bit of a twist, though. And I will phrase it thus: it's not American theater if. Do either of you have a fill in the blank or any lingering thoughts on that?
It's not American theater if it's not what?
In the magazine.
American Theater Magazine is published by Theater Communications Group. Visit us online at www.tcg.org/American Theater. Thanks for listening.